Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Joanna Hutchinson, the head of data at the Pension Regulator. So I want to obviously, you know, we were talking about it a little bit before we started the recording, but you know, about your kind of postdoctoral research and you know, some of the work that you did. I was hoping you could kind of talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So. My previous career in academia, I worked with gorillas and chimpanzees, mostly in sanctuaries or in African rainforests. So I spent most of my 20s working in a completely different sector in middle of rainforest, living in tents, having to carry rucksacks through swamps and jungles to be able to get to the field sites to collect the data. So, I mean, that was something that I always wanted to do from being a little girl, and was really lucky in that I was able to actually fulfill those dreams. And from quite a young age, to be able to change sectors, and I went into the civil service, was in the civil service for 5 years, and moved to the pension regulator as the head of data recently. The trend through that is the understanding of data, the understanding of the importance and the use of data through what you're doing. So in science, it's very much hypothesis testing. So you're very firm about the information that you're collecting when you're in the field, because you know that you need to answer the question that you've posed to yourself at the end. And that's the same standard that you apply working as a statistician in government, where you're wanting to answer a question to society, or I worked a lot on the 2011 census, and we were looking at how to publish data so people would understand it, and to ensure that the quality of data was high enough to actually make the judgments that we wanted to. So the same practices that you trained in. The really interesting thing about moving into data from statistics is understanding that anything that's published from government has a high public value and should be given that value, in that stakeholders are expecting that certain data will come from government to make it transparent, but also to give us insight in what's happening in society. To ensure that that happens, you have to know your sector and what's happening as well.
You're obviously someone, I can imagine from the conversation that we've had, is kind of outcome driven and sees data as a kind of a means to solving problems. Is that, I suppose, is that close to being accurate?
To me, what's really important is to have value and to have impact. I don't go to work to do a 9-to-5 job, and I don't go to work based on how much I'm paid. That's never been sort of motivations. It's the impact that you can have. And data certainly shows, particularly in this sector at the moment, that there's a high impact in the work that we do, in being able to drive greater insights, more efficiency into businesses, and help people work in different ways. So there's certainly that element. The creativity and the flexibility and the extent of the work that data teams get into is also you know, incredibly diverse. So it feels, running a data team feels like having a business inside a business. We don't just do the analytics. We hold policies on data, and we manage data in certain ways. We have to ensure that everybody in the organization understands what maybe governance is, or how we're managing the data. But we also have to lead people through this change. This understanding of actually using data in your day-to-day business isn't that scary. And that's a big concept in this field. So the UK comes 33 out of 35 in the OECD and statistics on numeracy. So there's a large proportion of our society that, for whatever reason, have never excelled in maths. And if you don't excel in something, if you're not comfortable with it, then you generally avoid it. You generally keep away from it. So if you're trying to change a culture to be more data-driven, then you have to look for ways to engage people and to show people that actually you can put a dashboard on your desk that's got a traffic light system on it, powered by data at the back. But you don't have to be engaging in that in your job. That's not scary for you. Or to, you know, having conversations across peer groups about how we can best get the teams involved to put more data into their business and drive some efficiencies. But of course, you're tackling then that people have got to invest the time up front to help us and show us what it is that they need. And businesses are tight. So, you know, you've always got the resource issues and the potentials there.
There's now this kind of big portion of the job and sense of responsibility towards education. I think that people are kind of aware now of, you know, the benefits of obviously cybersecurity is obvious, but also of data and how they can best utilize that. And now the people who've worked within the space, that there's the education side of things as much as the execution. And I just wonder how, whether that's kind of, you know, because you're now working within the government, or do you think that that's a relatively new outcome that you've had to start working towards, is actually educating people on data and trying to motivate them to become more data driven. Is that a move that's happened, I suppose, relatively recently?
Being data driven in organisations is relatively new, and as it's taken off, there's a demand for chief data officers, for data scientists who are seen as, you know, the have the capability to be able to drive these insights and these changes. And, you know, some of the bigger companies have tried to make these changes, spent millions of pounds on expensive equipment and technology, only to find that the change and the impact on the business has been quite limited. So if you look at their insights, what they're finding, so you don't take people with you, like in any change program, then you don't get the changes that you envisage, even if you've put the technology in place. And I think data, because it involves number, which, you know, potentially isn't fashionable or particularly appreciated, you have to do much more work to enable that change to go around. This isn't getting somebody to swipe their card in when they come in the morning, although that may be one facet of it. This is potentially aligning data to the strategic operating model for the organisation and driving the change from the top down to every function that goes through that. It's a different way of thinking, it's a different way of engaging, and it's innovative and it's creative, and there's no set process. And a lot of those things, you know, cause people to wobble.
There's a resilience there, and that's something that you have to overcome. And do you feel that sense of responsibility from the government perspective to educate and ensure that, you know, you have to kind of break these habits? Are we at that stage where we're so confident in these kind of data-driven approaches that it's time now to try and focus on changing, you know, people's way of thought and businesses' way of thought from a data perspective, both in public and private sectors?
I think it takes time. It takes time to instigate any kind of change. The pension regulator is just over 500 people. So, you know, that's a smaller scale change than other organisations, you know, that are multi-glomerate and combining data from across the world kind of thing. But the change is still there, and the variability in the way people react to change is pretty well precedented. So understanding the impact of change on individuals and who and when and where they're likely to be, you know, concerned about this and how you mitigate that is part of a data team's job. So it's, again, outside of the realm of data, you have to have a plethora of skills to understand the change mechanisms of organisations in general and then apply those into the more specific change that we're making with regard to data. And it's imperative that you can actually talk to people and have a good narrative about what you're doing and why you're doing it, be able to sell the benefits and be able to apply what you know about data and about data changes onto their specific business area and help them to understand what it means to them.
And, you know, what are some of the things, as you've been on this journey, what are some of the big kind of learnings that have, you know, surprised you as you've kind of continued to work towards a more data-driven country?
So I think there's a couple of things with regard to sort of changing sectors as well. There's a lot of skills that I bring from a different sector that I wouldn't have expected to use. So the narrative and the being able to to speak to people about your work. It's very much something that's trained into you in academia, to be able to go and present at conferences, to explain what you're doing to and give public engagements, particularly when you're talking about gorillas and chimpanzees. Society quite likes that kind of thing. So you're trained to be much more forward focused in academia these days, which helps in these kinds of roles. The diversity of teams is also something that's paramount, particularly in data teams. You can't have a group of people with the same skills. Now, in the past, that's very much been the way in certain business areas, the call centres or even analytical teams. You'd be expected to have certain skills to be able to use certain packages. The way that we're looking at data scientists and at the data teams now is that you have a range of skills. And you have a range of skills that work together. And it's that building of a team that will collaborate and will work together for the benefit of the business. It's breaking down those silos and those boundaries between different groups of people within organisations that enables you to get in and to do that. And having the recognition that you can be more senior in an organisation, but not have some of the detailed understanding of how to make these data changes, or that somebody new to the organisation could have one of the best ideas. And to be able to accept that and harness that and move forward.
Yeah, we're always constantly surprised by people, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there was there's something that I always remember when I was out in the rainforest, and we'd been awaiting the big professor to come from America to visit his field site, and we'd prepared, and the guy that ran the kitchen from the local village, who, you know, had no education whatsoever, had learned how to bake cakes on the charcoal stove, and he couldn't wait to show the professor. And I was out in the forest with a couple of the rangers and the professor. And of course, everyone had paid a lot of attention to him since he'd arrived, and we wanted to learn more about what he knew about the forest. And then the weather came down, the weather changed, the storms came down, and the forest there is very difficult to navigate, not easy to know where you are. We were hours from camp. But it wasn't the professor that got us out of there that night. It was one of the young rangers that was with us, who, of course, had lived in the rainforest all of his life and knew exactly where we were and how to get us out. And I think stories like that and those kind of experiences really bring to me that actually in an organisation, you're part of a team, not part of a silo. You need those mixture of skills, and you need people that will work together to help everybody to benefit.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think that there's almost more value in a lot of cases in people who have a fresh perspective on things. I've said many times that from my perspective, you know, there is kind of there is a creative element to data that I think people wouldn't actually consider. So keeping a perspective that's goes beyond kind of internal is something that I think is paramount to engage in a fresh take on things.
Teams are balances, and one of the important factors that has to be in any team is the organizational knowledge. So yeah, people can sit in organizations for periods of time and potentially get ingrained in what they're doing. But actually the value that they can add by having the understanding of the organisation and of the historic context of things that have happened is incredibly valuable. And actually you can't do the job without those people who are actually there to help you and guide you. And the key is to be able to ensure that they have the opportunities to be able to engage in new ways or develop in ways that they want to going forward, so that they continue to remain creative. And that may be going out to conferences, meeting other people from different sectors or networking in different ways. So encouraging people that you have in the organisation to do more of different things is incredibly valuable.
I've tend to find myself on the odd occasion with regards to data saying, like, all right, ignore certain patterns. Should we ever ignore data?
It's interesting, isn't it? So what I really find fascinating with my sort of psychology background is that we all have perceptions, and we all have moral backgrounds and ways that we've been brought up and things that we believe in. And sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not. And actually, who knows which is true and which isn't? Some of these things we use to run our lives, how we vote and the way that we live, our aspirations for careers and jobs and study that we have undertaken. So all of those are sort of ingrained into us. And what data, good data, helps you to do is to pull apart what's actually real and what actually is just a concept or is just something that you've believed and been taught but actually doesn't exist in society in that way anymore. And the same is true in businesses. There's a lot of examples in our work of where the customer call center feel that customers are behaving in this way. Well, okay, that's really interesting because that's your horizon scanning, that's your insight. We want to look at that. But then when you look at some of the data, and again, you have to have good data, you'll actually find that there's nothing in that whatsoever. So you can talk about something and you can encourage that thought to go ahead, and the data can actually allow you to understand if that's actually a trend or something that's happening or just something that's actually been talked about a lot across the office.
How difficult is it, to use, I suppose it's quite an American term, but like to compartmentalize, you know, the two, I suppose?
It depends what you're doing, doesn't it? So in academia, what happens is you're trained to set hypotheses and to test those hypotheses. And that's very firm training and it's good, rigorous training that is something that, I carry with me in the job to date. So if we're looking at a new piece of work, then what is the hypothesis? What is the question? What is it that the business want to get out of this? And understanding that and putting pressure back on the business areas to be able to give you those answers really helps you to drive data into what it is that you're trying to find out. With regard to sort of bias throughout sort of data collecting, I think when you're collecting your own data and you're into the methodologies and the day-to-day work of it from an academic point of view, you're just collecting each data point. You do pick up a feel for what's going on and that kind of thing. But your analysis happens much later. And I think that separation between actually collecting the data and developing what you think and the analysis helps you to bring that partiality back into it. And the same happens in businesses in that a lot of the people from the business areas who want the data or the insights team or the risking team for us who've got some ideas on what's happening are separated from some of this analysis because your analytical unit or your data scientists are sat separate, so they have that impartiality to be able to feed the information back.
Do you think that kind of feeds into the concept that it makes high-level decisions more unbiased and much more kind of black and white data-driven if you don't kind of incorporate any more variables into what you're considering?
I think organisations are going in a lot of different ways at the moment. One of the main directions is to become data-driven. And I can't speak from the CEO perspective, but what you can see happening is that being more evidence-based makes the decision-making easier in some respects. You have to deliver a difficult message even to your non-executives or to your stakeholder community. Or even if you're trying to influence a sector of society, then the more confident you are in the analysis that's been given to you or the evidence that you're being presented with will enable you to do that better.
Do you think that it must be incredibly difficult to draw analysis based on people?
It's interesting, isn't it? So if you're looking at one person and you're studying one person's behaviour, then yes, you see that erraticness in what they do. But actually, when you're looking at a group of people across a sector or the whole of society, then they behave pretty much in a predictable manner. So if you're looking at compliance, like we do with the pension regulator, the majority of people will comply to the regulations that are set upon them. The majority of people will follow the rules and regulations, will send the paperwork in or attempt to, and will ring if they get stuck, will behave in a predictable manner. And then what the risking teams are doing, and this happens, across sectors, is they identify the main reasons why people wouldn't comply. And there's various reasons for that. So then again, you're getting another proportion of the society identified and you can start to tackle the reasons why people wouldn't comply to behave in the way that you expect, to encourage that behaviour to continue. So data can be used to identify why people don't comply, and you can use various information from society or different sectors to influence that. Of course, there's always a small percentage that fall out of that box, and that's always the challenge for us to identify who's got a different reason or what the changing trends are in society that may affect something like compliance and risking in different people in different times.
You know, when you're looking at, I suppose, forecasting now and the advancements that we have in the ways that we can collect data and correlate, are we finding now that, or have we had long enough really to where we can say that our forecasting predictions are becoming more accurate because of the technology and the way that we're actually, the things we can do now with data? Are we seeing more evidence of that?
Certainly, dependent on the sector and depending on what it is, but forecasting is becoming more and more prevalent, and the use of models to run the forecasts and to pull in ranges of data that are structured and unstructured to be able to run those is becoming much more prevalent and more commonplace as well. So the same with everything. The sector starts with a few good ideas and then it booms as more and more people get involved and as they then develop the techniques, the methodologies, and the software and the technology that enables you to do it quicker, better, and more efficient. So you are seeing a trend towards that.
We'll leave it there for now. I'm conscious of time and I can't imagine how busy you must be. So thank you so much, Joanna, for taking the time. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.